Are you happy? Like, really, truly happy in your life? If you think you could integrate a bit more happiness, and the answer is yes, then you are going to love this interview with GoodThink co-founder Amy Blankson. She is the only person named a Point of Light by two presidents. It's an award-winning author and supermom who literally studies the science of happiness. This was an incredible interview, and I was honored that Amy took time out of her incredible busy schedule for this interview. Get ready to be delighted and learn how to use technology to impact your well-being and happiness.
Today, I'm honored to have with us Amy Blankson, the world's leading expert on the connection between positive psychology and technology. Amy has worked with organizations such as Google, NASA, the US Army, the XPRIZE Foundation, and recently Princess Cruise Lines. She's received her BA from Harvard and an MBA from the Yale School of Management. She's been named a Point of Light by two different presidents and was a featured professor on Oprah's Happiness Course. Amy's the author of two books, The Future of Happiness, and an award-winning children's book called Ripple's Effect. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you so much. What a pleasure it is to be with you.
Yay, we're happy to have you. Now, for all of those people watching us who have just heard that huge list of things that you've done, would you be able to let us know what is it that you actually do and how long have you been doing it?
Absolutely. So I am a consultant, speaker, author, positive psychology researcher who got started about 10 years ago with my brother. We decided that we wanted to bring the research that we've been learning about at Harvard on positive psychology research to people who don't read academic journals on a regular basis, but could find the material really fascinating and helpful. And so I decided that I would bring my business background. Sean, my brother, would bring his research that he'd been doing at Harvard at the time, and we'd join forces together. We thought it was going to be a short term, maybe 6 week project, and 10 years later, here we are, and finding that it's something that people really care about, they want to know more about, and it's actually really helpful to have somebody be a translationist between what the academic journals say and what we actually need to know and do in our lives.
Yeah, it's so true. I remember being in university and trying to read all those journals and, trying to translate that to the common world, it's very different.
Absolutely.
So, what was it between you and your brother that really inspired you to start studying happiness?
So it's funny because when Sean actually was the one who approached me with the idea, he said, "I've got all this great research." At the time, he was a head teaching fellow for the most popular course at Harvard, which was the Science of Happiness course. It had been never been taught before, and all of a sudden, it took off. Like, one in every four students was taking this course. And all of a sudden, the media became interested, and they said, "Why do people care so much about happiness? Why aren't they taking Introduction to Economics or Behavioral Science? What's this deal with happiness?" And the parents were calling in wanting to know why their kids were studying happiness instead of, more legitimate subjects.
Right.
And what I think the fascination was that at that time, people were going through an economic slump and were in the midst of the recession. And people were really having to dig deeper about who they were outside of a job title, outside of a job maybe, what they were going to pursue when they sought a new position, or who did they want to be underneath all of that. And so I think that question really became something that people, not just at Harvard, but actually across the globe, became fascinated with. And then the question was, what do we do with that? How do we get there? What's the most important information? So the timing was key. And when Sean approached me with this idea, he came to me with what he called a business plan. And I was like, "That's a Starbucks napkin." And he's like, No, seriously, this is going to be good, I promise." And by the time we finished our conversation talking about what a positive psychology company could be or look like, then suddenly it came to life, and I realized that we were onto something, that something big and potentially wonderful could come out of it. And so that's how we got started studying happiness. It was not what I thought I would be doing with my life, but certainly has become something totally transformative for me.
I love that brother-sister duo. That's great. Have you guys always been close growing up?
We have. In fact, this is so cheesy, but I used to say when I was like 7 years old that I always wanted to work with my brother when I grew up. He says he does not remember that at all. But I think that it was something that I remember seeing some friends of ours who were a brother-sister duo who ran a paper route together. And every morning they woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, hopped on their bicycles, and they'd run the paper route. And I remember being a kid, seeing them come back from the paper route and high-fiving each other and just having this great relationship. And I was like, that's what I want. Like, I consciously remember making that choice in my mind that that was something someday I wanted to do. So it's a real privilege and pleasure to do so now.
That's fantastic. And I'm assuming you don't have any other siblings.
Nope, just the two of us.
I was going to say, no one's left out of this whole.
No, that forgotten.
That's fantastic. Now, I know you talk a lot about technology as well and how you can use technology to help with happiness. Can you go into a little bit of detail about that?
Certainly. So, you know, I mentioned when I started with this company about 10 years ago, the questions that we were getting from people when we'd speak to audiences all over the globe. We've been to more than 50 different countries and a wide variety of audiences, from farmers in Zimbabwe to the stock exchange in New York, like huge differences. And across the globe, the questions we got were about, you know, how do I bring out my potential? How do I find meaning and purpose? That was 2007. And it certainly has held true for years, but the questions that we're starting to get now have become much more technology driven. People are anxious and uncertain about the future yet again. And it could be economic or political forces or just the nature of technology catching up with us. But this is officially, I think, 1 month past the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone coming out.
Wow.
And when you think about that, that was a big moment in history for changing the way that we interact on a social level, on a work level, on a relationship level. And so I think those questions are very naturally evolving. People want to know, how do they set up boundaries for their children? How do they set up boundaries for themselves so they can stay focused? And so happiness has become uniquely intertwined with this idea of technology being a huge shifter in our personal and professional development. So that's why I decided to start studying this. I felt like it was an important question. I wanted to have a good answer when people asked.
For sure. I mean, one of the reasons that Brandon and I started our project here was because of working on cruise ships and then getting on land and realizing that no one could have a conversation without their cell phone anymore. They were really using their phone as a social crutch. Now, what do you say to people when they don't see technology as a problem? They don't see it as a hindrance to their communication skills? Is there something that you would address?
Well, you know, I think that it is very individual driven. Some people don't have a problem with technology because simply they just don't use it. I'm thinking of my aunt and uncle who just got their own iPhone about 2 months ago and are discovering what this is like. And I remember my uncle saying that his biggest problem with using a laptop was that the keys are not stacked on different levels like his old typewriter was. It's all flat.
Oh my goodness.
So there's a wide spectrum of people who are addicted to technology versus completely not engaged with the technology. But for those of us who are using it constantly, it's part of our lives, particularly our generation as well. We sometimes can make stories up to ourselves about how we might be able to focus more than the average person, or, you know, I'm using technology for good on the most part. So I think that the problem with those statements is that they are self-reflective and perhaps not completely accurate. And so what I like to do with audiences is to give them some real data about themselves that can give them insight. Do they need to change their behavior, or are they completely fine? And then they'll know. And so what I like to encourage my audiences to do is to download an app called Realized. And I have no relationship with Realized. I just like the way this app works. I think that one is for the Apple products, iOS, and then there's one on Android called Quality Time. And what it does is it simply tracks your phone usage, how many times you unlock your phone, how long you're using your phone, what apps you are using on your phone. And if you run it for about a week or even 24 hours, you can get a pretty good snapshot of your own personal behavior habits. I was shocked by my behavior. I'm writing a book on technology and happiness. I feel like I try to keep a good balance in my life, On my daughter's birthday, I was on my phone for 6 hours. That also happens to be Thanksgiving, when I'm supposed to be with my family. I'm like, what was I doing? And on average, I would spend about four and a half hours on my phone. So this was a huge wake-up call for me. I was like, wow. The average smartphone user now unlocks their phone 150 times a day. And I only unlocked mine 30 times a day, but that's because it was on. I was on it for so long that I never closed it. So that kind of information is, wow, it will really give you a kick in the pants to say, okay, I need to do something. For me, this is something I need to pay attention to. I have not met a person yet who's not been shocked by their data and their results. So I encourage people to check it out, either Quality Time for Android or Realized, which is, it's missing the E at the last letter behind it before the D. So REALIZD. And those are a great starting place for finding out what your behavior patterns are like.
Oh my gosh, I'm almost scared to find out.
I know, right?
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty good with my cell phone. I mean, Brandon and I are one of the few people that we leave our cell phone in the house when we take the dogs for a walk. Like, we spend time without it, but I don't know if I want to know how long I'm actually on that phone. That's incredible.
Tell me how it goes.
So how has all this research affected the way that you and your family use technology? I know you have kids. Does it change the way you let them use technology?
I do. So I have a 10-year-old, 7-year-old, and a 4-year-old now. And the more I learn about this, the more it definitely helps me see the need to create some effective boundaries. And I don't want to perseverate on this. I don't want to have this be some dramatic moment where my family shuts off technology. I actually really love technology. I think there's a lot we can learn from it. I think there's a lot we can do as a family to connect with relatives through FaceTime or to do online learning or to just have some great family enjoyment together watching a silly YouTube video or whatnot. But I do see how important it is to create some boundaries around screen time and specifically for my husband and I to model effective behaviors because the kids are watching very carefully and to have something set up in place that will help keep the kids safe on the internet. That's a big one that I've discovered, not just for myself, but for numerous families I've spoken to now. The more that we stumble upon new content being created, which it is faster than ever right now, the more that we're seeing that we have to catch up to where technology is and maybe even get a little ahead of it. So by that, I mean, I recently tried out a new device called Kids Wi-Fi, and it's a router that you plug into the wall like a nightlight, and it hops onto your home router network. And what it does is give me the ability to monitor how long my kids are on Wi-Fi, so I can shut it off at the dinner hour or at, say, 8 p.m. at nighttime, or they're not supposed to use it before 7 a.m. I can set screen time limits down to 2 hours. I can be more specific, like there's no gambling sites, no pornography sites. They're not even supposed to get on YouTube. They're supposed to use KidsTube. And by setting up those different blocks, I know that it's a safety net. It doesn't mean that I, as a parent, can be hands off with what I'm letting them do on the internet, but it just means that when I'm not looking, those moments are more protected than they would have been otherwise. And so my oldest daughter, she loves fashion, and I was struggling because every time I turned around, she was trying to search for some new fashion design blog. And it was great. It was innocent. She's looking for, you know, art and design and history, and it's like, great, go for it. But there was one time right after I installed Kids Wi-Fi that she came running to me and she's like, Mom, the internet's broken. I was like, oh, sweetie, what were you searching for? And she said, I was looking up cute girl short skirt, and like the web just won't work. It's broken. And I said, oh, sweetie, that's because mommy blocked it. Here's why I blocked it. And we had a great conversation about why it was important for me to set boundary limits both for her and for her sisters as well, because there are things they're not ready to see. And it was something that was, it was a great catch to be able to know I could take a deep breath and realize that she had not seen content that she could have seen that would have been particularly scarring for life. So in my own family, I find we're being more intentional, more conscious, and more proactive with the way that we're using technology. The other surprise that has come out of this process is that I've really become more of a digital minimalist, and I'm hoping to be more and more so. I love technology. I think it has great benefits, but I'm trying to scale back to only the technology in my life that's actually helpful and beneficial to me, because there's a lot of stuff that I download or try out that's not. And for the purpose of my book, I wound up trying out over 400 apps and gadgets and devices. 400. I have this philosophy that if I do a deep dive into what's out there, I can save people a lot of time with having to do the same thing themselves. But what I found in the process was that I visited the chiropractor over 5 times. My eyes started to burn, my back was hurting, and so it really gave me a sense of, okay, this is what it feels like to overdo it. So how do I scale back, and what's most important? And one of the greatest strategies I've heard has just been taking my iPhone screen, and I only put the apps on the home screen that I really want to use every day. And everything else is in a folder or on another screen on my iPhone. So that gives me some control over what I have in my visual space. I've also learned to keep my phone behind my laptop screen so that when I'm working, I'm not constantly seeing somebody text a message or, oh, I've got to check on this, or, oh, a news alert came through, I wonder what's happening in the world. What it does, it just helped me to focus. And so I still have the technology. I'm just controlling where it is in my environment and how I'm using it.
Those are such great tips. I'm already thinking now, like, I want to start doing that, putting my phone behind my computer so I don't keep checking it, because it does get distracting. It's very distracting when you see things popping up and you want to keep checking. I think that's fantastic.
This will blow your mind then. So what I found in my research was there's a study called the Mirror Presence Study, and it said that your cell phone in your visual field, the mere presence of it makes you less productive, less focused, and less happy. And the reason why is because even if you never touch it or look at it, your brain is anticipating that you might get a message and you might be needed, which is an addictive feeling. And so our mind and our eye, even if you don't realize it, are constantly turning to the device, wondering what's going to happen. So nothing's happened. You haven't touched it. You haven't looked at it, but you know it's there. So by hiding it out of your line of sight, it actually makes you happier, more focused, more productive. And particularly when I go out for coffee with friends, or I'm trying to meet up with somebody that I really want to pay attention to, it's absolutely essential that I have it out of my line of sight, because I find myself constantly looking over. So another good tip for you there.
I love that. And I mean, that's huge. Just making sure that your phone is out of sight when you're having those personal connections. I think that's a really big deal. That's one of the things that Brandon and I try to preach on regularly. Now, if you had to pick 3 ways that you could use technology, your top 3 to use technology to help increase happiness, would you be able to pick 3?
Ooh, that's such a good question. Mm-hmm. I can pick 3. I don't know if I have enough time to tell you why for all 3. The first one would be, I'm loving my Fitbit Charge 2. I recently switched from the Apple Watch to the Fitbit because I felt like Apple Watch was too colorful, too much going on. So I wanted to scale back to something that just provided me with my steps and that helped me know the time. That's all I wanted. Mm-hmm. And so by doing so, I've been able to connect with my health a little bit better, which directly impacts my happiness levels. I think this health revolution is changing because of technology. We find out more information about our sleep habits, our oxygen quality, our ability to stay on track with our health goals. I think that is making me happier. So that's one. The second one would be this Firestone, which is this small lava-shaped rock that clips onto your bra strap or your waistband, and it measures your breathing. And just by studying your breathing patterns, it can tell whether you're feeling focused or calm or tense or anxious. And then if you start to feel tense or anxious, it'll send a message to your iPhone or to your Apple Watch or your whatever smart device you've got on. Right. And just very gently say, you know, you're feeling tense. Maybe you need to take a moment to breathe. This one is crucial for me because I tend to get anxious at times and I'll stop breathing. I'll just forget to breathe. And so what happens is when it gives me that message, it helps me to realize why I'm feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And the the story I like to tell is from last summer when my daughter, who was 9 at the time, she accidentally, of course, broke her neck. And she's completely fine now. But at the time, it was this dramatic moment, and I wound up being the one to take her to the hospital. And the entire way to the hospital, through the hospital visit, I had this Firestone on, and it said, "Amy, you're feeling calm." And I was like, "Really? I don't feel calm." And it said, I guess it was that sort of maternal instinct of like, I need to focus and I need to fix this, so just go. Wow. But when we were walking out of the hospital, that's the point at which the Firestone started to vibrate and say, "Amy, you're feeling tense." And I was like, "Yeah, this whole time, I think I was feeling tense." But the reason why it peaked in that moment was I had been looking around at other people in the hospital, wondering what they thought of me as the mother of a daughter with a broken neck, as opposed to being stressed out about my daughter's new reality for the summer and wearing this neck brace and what that was going to mean for her development. I'm ashamed to admit, but I was thinking about what other people were going to think about me, and that caused a lot of stress. And so by having that device peek for me in that moment and say, "Hey, why are you feeling stressed?" I could stop, recognize my behavior, and then turn and pivot to be more of the person that I wanted to be and put that thought aside and deal with it later. So that kind of insight, it's hugely important to my happiness level. It helped me understand myself better. It helped me change my behavior. And I really felt like that added some quality to my life that I'd never had that insight in the moment before. So that's two. I'll stop there because I know you have a lot of other questions, but those are two of my absolute favorites.
Wow. Those are really good ones. I haven't heard of that second one. I'm going to have to check it out. Definitely.
Yeah, it's really great. I think it's spire.io.
Spire.io. Okay. I'm going to have to look it up. That sounds incredible. It does. It gives you a little bit more insight into your own life and how you're feeling. And I think that's huge. That's incredible.
Yeah. There's this whole field emerging now of what they're calling mindful technologies. Mm-hmm. There are technologies that instead of distracting us, they're intended to help us go deeper into ourselves. There's one more I have to tell you about. It's called the Muse headband, and it is designed to help you with your meditation. I don't know about you. Have you ever tried meditation before?
Yeah, we actually own a Muse headband.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Brandon swears by it.
Yeah, it's great. You know, for people who are brand new, particularly to meditation, they've either dabbled in it and didn't know what they were doing, or they're still trying to develop a practice. I feel like it is so helpful to give you insight on whether you're actually getting better at it. So not only is it helping me, it's for those people out there who don't know what the Muse headband is, it's this headband that goes around your forehead, and it connects with an audio track that will either provide ocean sounds or birds or forest sounds or whatever. And the idea is that the headband has sensors on it that help you to track your brain waves and see whether or not you're actually stilling your mind. And if you start to get distracted, it teaches you how to overcome that distraction and to become more calm through that moment. And so I've tried it with my children. I've tried it with my husband. Pretty much everybody who's come to my house now has tried the Muse headband because I think it's so revolutionary, the insight that it can give you. So more technologies like this, I want to send a signal to the developer world that this is the kind of technology that we want. We don't want more Candy Crush. That is really colorful and addictive, but that's not what I need in my life. I want things that help me understand me and make me better.
Well, I think you're definitely on the way. I mean, with your speeches, with your talks, with your books, you're really getting the word out there that technology can be used, and it can be used in a positive manner. It's just choosing and being specific about which pieces of technology you're choosing to use and choosing to have in your life. And I think that's incredible.
Spot on. Yeah.
It's not getting rid of it altogether. We don't have to go live in the forest and do nothing. We can use technology, just use it properly. I think that's awesome. If you had to pick three skills that were necessary for success in today's crazy world, your top three, what would they be?
Three skills. Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Number one, optimistic mindset.
All right.
Because optimistic mindset is able to see success in multiple different ways, meaning that there's not just one direction to be successful, but that you can see if you fail in one direction, you can keep trying different directions. The definition of optimism is the belief that your behavior matters. And I think that that has scientifically been proven to show that individuals with an optimistic mindset are they're 3 times more creative, they have 23% less stress, they have 50% lower heart disease, and the list goes on and on. So I think that optimistic mindset is an absolute key. Second key to success is friends, social support. So friends and social support have been found to be the most predictive indicator of your long-term happiness and success. And those individuals who are able to provide social support to other people, not just receiving it, but giving it to other people, are more likely to receive it in return as well, like 40% more likely. So I think that is a key to your personal success, as well as helping other people be successful. By making other people better, you're better too. And the third one, I think the third one is the way that we see stress in our lives. We oftentimes see stress as a threat instead of as an opportunity. And the research we've been doing through Good Think, my company, has found that individuals who are able to instead think of stress as a challenge instead of a threat are more successful. And here's why. Because those individuals don't activate their fight or flight response, and instead they're able to see new opportunities and ways to go around it. So by stopping in the moment and thinking about your stress a little bit differently, it helps you to be more successful and to find other avenues towards that success. So those three have been pretty transformative in my life, and I think that it bears fruit in the research world as well.
I love that. You have so many statistics to back up. It's incredible. You can tell that you've been studying this for a really long time. You truly are an expert in the situation. So I love that. So now I have a few questions just to learn a little bit more just about you, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Who inspires you? You're an inspiration to a ton of people, but who do you look up to?
Who do I look up to? So those are different questions. Who inspires me versus who I look up to? I would say who inspires me are my kids, because they are the future. And there is nothing more motivating to me than to create a future that is better and brighter for them. I'm sure many people out there would say the same thing. But when you see that the kids start to get this idea of gratitude, for instance, or we've recently been talking to my children about selfless acts and what that means. And as they latch onto it and they for better or worse, are competing to see who has more selfless acts during the day. I'm like, yes, they're getting it. It's really inspiring that the work I do is important to them. But in terms of who I look up to, I think there's so many people. I think I most look up to Michelle Obama as one of the individuals, and I have her on my mind recently because I got to meet her in person. I got to see her at a conference I went to recently, which was a big life dream for me because I do admire her so much. And what she said in the talk that I heard her give was that people were asking her, you know, here you are in the White House and your kids, you're trying to give them a normal life. And a lot of people would be very concerned about your own children having their own good experience through those years, their teenage years. You know, you want to make sure they have a good Christmas or a good Easter or whatever holidays you celebrate. And yet in the midst of that, Mrs. Obama would invite the public to come spend those holidays, whether it's a giant Easter egg hunt on the lawn or it's a huge Christmas celebration. And she said, well, the reason why I did that was because these are all my children. All these kids out there are there. And in this Maasai village, she once heard this idea that when people ask, you know, how each other are doing, instead of saying, how are you doing? They would say, you know, how are the children in the village? And you either say that the children are well or the children are not well. But that idea was that it was more than just you personally. It was your community. And so she said, you know, I invited all these kids to the White House for an Easter egg hunt because not all the kids out there are well. And I want to make all the kids out there have the best experience possible. And I just love that switch on that philosophy about, you know, not just how am I doing, what am I up to, and where am I going next, but what are we doing together? How are we working to make this world a better place? And how do I think about people beyond myself? Because it's very tempting to become insular, but I really love that concept and look up to her a lot for that.
That's incredible. Good choice. She's quite a lady.
Yeah, she is.
Do you have any book recommendations? Your favorite read?
All right. So staying on topic here, because I read a lot. I have all kinds of books that I like to read. But the most related book that I read recently is by Cal Newport, and it's called Deep Work. And the book talks about focus and intention, but it also talks about minimalism, which is something I've become increasingly fascinated with. And I'm only partway through it right now, but it's so well written and so thought-provoking that I encourage everyone out there to take a peek at it as well.
I love it. I have to look it up. I don't know that one, actually.
So yeah.
I'm excited. I'll look it up. If you could have a conversation with anyone, who would it be and why?
Conversation with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think if I could talk to anybody, I think I would like to talk to Eleanor Roosevelt. She was a fascinating lady. And I have this political thread, I guess, going through. But I loved what she did in terms of social development and very similar to Obama. Philosophy where she cared a lot about community change and creating initiatives that would be longstanding, something that would be transformative for the future. This past weekend, I had this is related, I promise. I had this great conversation with an organization called IEEE, and it's this group of engineers who are, it's for an engineering organization, but it's people from all different academic walks who've come together to talk about how we can provide a set of recommendations to developers in the future that are human-centered. So for everyone who's scared of artificial intelligence out there, it's because there's very real threats to our lives or potentially to our jobs and so or to our design that things might become more addictive or that they're money motivated as opposed to heart-centered or human-centered design. And so the idea was to develop a list of recommendations to designers that would say, hey, you know, here's some best practices for how you can make your technologies better and more human-centered. And the example that was given was just somebody who's in a wheelchair that there was a design that was under development for a wheelchair that could measure the amount of stress that was underneath your arms when you're sitting in the wheelchair for so long. And that some people found that information to be super helpful and other people found that that was very distracting for them. So how do you create a sense of design for things like wheelchairs where you're taking into consideration the individual who's sitting in the chair, what did they want to get out of it? How do they experience life and how can we make things better for them? And I just love that they were asking these questions. They were thinking about it and that there's something that could be put out there as whether or open source or otherwise that would help to shape this conversation. It's a little bit like writing a Declaration of Independence for the technological future. And so I think that there are these programs that are in development that very much mirror where we were at in the times when Eleanor Roosevelt was the first lady in the White House and she was having to create social programs to deal with the times. So we're starting to face some of these issues. And I think that the more we can shape these conversations now, I'm excited to see where they take us in the future.
That's fantastic. And I love that you're part of that as well. That's great. Yeah,
it's really cool.
What exciting things, new things are you working on right now, and how can our audience find out more about them?
Okay, so one of the projects I'm working on right now is creating a scientifically validated tech health survey, which sounds very very heavy, but
mouthful.
The idea is just to have maybe even a 10 to 15 question survey that can help you self-identify whether or not you are feeling addicted to technology and whether it's creating some sort of impact on your health and happiness levels. And so that is the basic idea behind it. But in the same way that we now have sunscreen, think back about the times before sunscreen was invented and really important. My mom used to say that she'd lay out on her roof and she would put baking oil on her skin and try and tan. And she's as fair as I am. And of course it went horribly wrong. But that's because sunscreen wasn't a big deal back then. And I think now we're starting to have these moments where we're recognizing we have some negative health effects in our lives, but we don't have the screen or the whatever you want to call it, right, to protect yourself from these kind of negative effects. So how do we bring this to bear in our lives? And I think that the Tech Health Survey helps us to be a little bit more aware of, you know, How can I help my children understand when they've had too much time on the internet? Say it's only been an hour. They have 2 hours of allowed screen time, but after an hour, you start to see they're misbehaving. They're a little bit grouchy. Their eyes are getting glazed over. You notice that their posture is like slumping over. So teaching both ourselves and our kids how to recognize these signs and then what to do to prevent that sort of negative exposure or sunburning, in a sense, to the computer. So this is a new passion and project of mine. I think it's going to help people to move along a continuum of, you know, awareness about how you're using your phone, which I do through Realized or the Quality Time app, moving on to your tech health, looking at where are you at now, get a snapshot of yourself, be aware of yourself, and then how do you change behavior because of it? So that's going to be a new passion of mine. It's currently under development still, but it will be available on amyblinkson.com, hopefully by the end of the summer.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure to put a link for that right under this video as well, so that everyone out there watching can go ahead and click on that and check that out as well. That's fantastic. Now, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us? Anything I missed?
The only other thing I'd share, because I've thrown out a lot of different apps and gadgets and devices, and I know it's hard to keep track when you're listening or potentially if you're in the car, there is a PDF download on my website that's amyblinkson.com/stage, S-T-A-G-E, and it gives you a list of about 40 different apps that are tested by myself that I think are best case scenarios that you can pick and choose from if you're trying to, say, develop a practice of gratitude or journaling or meditation. Here's some devices or apps that you might want to check out. I just want to say I'm throwing 40 at you, but that's because I want you to pick one. Pick one of them and try to develop a positive habit in your life by taking one of them, following through for 21 days. And if you rock that out, then go pick up a second one. But don't get overwhelmed. Try to keep it simple and easy so that you can be in the real world spending quality time with people that you love.
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much. We're going to make sure to put all of those links right under the video so that our audience here can check all of that out and make sure to visit your site and learn a lot more about you. And this has been absolutely lovely. Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And that's all, folks. What did you think? Let us know the favorite thing that you learned in the comments below. If you know someone that could use a little bit of inspiration, go ahead and send them the link to this video. I know they'll appreciate it. Below, I've included the links to Amy's website, books, and courses. So if there's something that we spoke about and you want to find it, we've made it super easy for you. As always, click subscribe down in the corner so you never miss another video. Every Wednesday, we'll be releasing new interviews with experts and influencers so you can learn the best tips straight from the source. And don't miss open enrollment for our Millennial Magnetism course. Click the link in the description for details and discover how you can unleash your inner awesome. Until next time, ciao for now.